holding at the bottom of your testament bay, two lines from the bottom. By the way, your head scroll describing the third base of Mikdash, Shibon and Meher Yamenu, and the clothes of the Koyanim and the Avodah there and so forth. So he's, to a certain extent, he's reiterating details that are in the Torah, sometimes clarifying them. Like you said, the Torah tells us that the bigger Kohen are made out of bad, but we're not. We could always question what bad is, but we have a specific thing. Like the Chazal translates it as pishtim, which means linen. Sometimes he gives details which don't match up with what we say in the Torah. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere and a few other places, notably in Menachos, the Gemara talks about possibilities, what he means, because obviously he can't be contradicting the Torah. On a pshat level, some of the portions say that he's talking about there will be certain special, there'll be because of the higher level of Yusha, therefore there'll be certain Ginyim will be different in those times when Mashiach stands, or whatever. Anyway, the Gemara doesn't see it that way. The Gemara sees it that anything that Yechezkel is describing is he's describing halachas that apply even in earlier times, as long as there, any time there's a bit of English. So we'll learn in Menachos. We'll talk about what the Gemara explains on it. You have different levels. I mean, there's different levels of explaining her. Yeah, fine. But in other words, according to the Gemara's way of looking at it, he's giving a prophecy which incorporates details of the halacha and clarifying them or whatever, but not that he's saying something new is going to be done, but rather he's saying what was always done is still going to be done in the time of the third Beis Hamikdash. In terms of that's the only thing. He does give details that seemingly are new. The Gemara elsewhere in Menachos and in other places talks about that they're not really new. They're just restating the genome of the Torah in a different way. But some of them are partial. Yeah, some of them are partial. It's fine. That means that he's actually teaching things that are going to be different in Mashiach. Whatever. Now is not the place to get into it, but yeah. Anyway. No, of course not. But, well, I mean, the Sanhedrin of his time can decide, but that's not the point. The point is that a Novi can't decide halacha. So it's not that. That's the thing. So again, one way of looking at it is that he's talking about halachic level because there'll be a higher level of kedusha. Therefore, for example, the regular Kohen will be on the level of the Kohen Gadol of earlier times. So certain things will apply to them that only apply to the Kohen Gadol before. And then also there'll be the Milurim, the special carbonates for the inauguration, the Mikdash, etc. Whereas again, the Gemara doesn't see it that way. The Gemara sees it as that means it's exactly the same as restated in different versions. A lot of this, by the way, I forgot to mention yesterday, that these are this public and a number of these Sukkim are actually the Haftarah of this week. That's part of Hashemah, the section from the Chesed that describes a number of these things. All right. So, by Yalta. So we quoted a prophet, we quoted the beginning of the first half of the prophet yesterday, that the Kohen wear linen turbans and they wear linen breeches, linen pants, and the prophet finishes off, Lo Yakru by Yalta. They should not belt themselves by Yalta, which means the sweat. So what does that mean? My lo yakru by yoda. What does that mean? I'm going to buy it. It means it's telling us where the kohenim should be wearing their belts, their avnet. Where on their body should they be tying? Lo yakru b'makom shenazir. And it means they should not be tying the belt on a part of their body where they sweat. Kedetanya, namely, we learn in the Bible that shen chodrin, when they put on their belt, ein chodrin lo lamasim mokneh, and they do not put on the belt below their hips. Because there you have the stomach folds over there, and therefore you have an excessive amount of sweat. But it could be. Sometimes some people wear their belt higher, some people wear them lower. So in other words, you could have, you could be wearing the belt, let's say, for example, over here, like with a belt on a regular pair. It's activist, whatever. The point is not... Okay, the point is not too low because then the stomach folds over. Well, okay, fine. So it means the makom Rashi says makom shenichbal v'noifol shumun abdesin ala chalabosis, the place where the fat of the stomach folds over the hip bone. So not over there. The loyal milam masculine, and also they shouldn't be putting on the belt higher than their elbows because there you have the arm length. The elbow, not the shoulder. The elbow, yeah. Would you put it, let's say, over here, conceivably? You could. There's nothing preventing them from putting a belt on over here. But the problem is your arm lies against your body, or not your arm, your arm itself lies against the body over there, and therefore it produces swell. Ella connected actually again. The proper place to put on the belt is exactly corresponding to their elbows. So over here. So it's not. So it's actually a little bit higher than you would have the waistband of a pair of pants. Look at yourself. The waistband of a typical pair of pants. Is around here, but that's below. It's also below the elbow.
Right.
So they have to put it on right over there. Well, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that's really it. So that's what it means, all Yahru. By Yahru, that they shouldn't be putting on the belt in a place where there's extra sweat on the bottom. So in this connection, Amar Rabashi, Amar Hunabar Nosson, so Rabashi says that Hunabar Nosson Bolton. Hunabar Nosson was somebody important in the government. The Goyim actually mentioned that, sure, the Goyim mentioned that he was actually raised to live. So Amar Hunabar Nosson, so Hunabar Nosson, who was a Reish Kobosa, says Rabashi one time told me, Zinna Chodahab Ka'imna Kamege Izgadar Ravka. One time, says Hunabar Nosson, I was standing in front of King Izgadar, who was the king of Persia at the time. In general history, he's known as Yezgur. Bahama immediately had me at the Reish Kobosa. He was a minister in the court. So therefore, he had to appear in front of the king at the time. Bahama immediately had me know. So Hunabar Nosson says that, and telling the story to Rabashi, and Rabashi is repeating it over, that one time my belt was too high, the Tisye Nihale, and he lowered it from me. He reached over and lowered Hunabar Nosson's belt to the proper place by the elbow, like we're saying over here. Well, Amavi, and the king says to me, it says on you Jewish people that this city is kingdom of Kohenim and a holy nation, so therefore you need to dress the part. You need to look the part. When you're not wearing your belt properly, then you don't look the part. So now the Hunabar Nosson says, when I came to Amemar and told over the story, Amari, he says to me, you have fulfilled in you what the Pasuk says. It's going to happen fully. Lots of love, that kings will be your nursemaid. Like this, the king, reached over and adjusted your belt. The Goyish king. So there is a vast amount to talk about this, this is the king of Persia, actually. You know, nowadays, Persia is somewhat less than friendly to Jewish people, but Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, has a very interesting explanation of this. It's actually a side thing in the middle of a long explanation that he has on a passage from the Zohar. He digresses, and then within that digression, there's other digressions, as Reb Levick often did, but whatever, he has a whole digression to explain the deeper meaning of what happened in the story over here. The gist of it, among the points he makes, is that having the belt too high indicates gvura. It means you're giving too much room for gvura, for severity, for strictness. That ever one time, many years later, talked about it in a sicha and pointed out the idea is the reason why we wear belts, in particular the reason why we wear gautel during davening, is to separate our upper half from our upper, more spiritual half, from our lower, more earthy half. So if you have the belt worn too high, because the point is, you know, they're both, it's not that you can't have one, of course you can't have one without the other, but nevertheless, a person has their higher faculties and their lower faculties, so the same way, in fact, the Zohar makes the comparison, the same way as in the Beit Hamikdash, you have the Parosh that separated the Kurdish from the Kurdish HaKadoshim, the same way, but of course, then you have to have that division between the higher and the lower faculties. We learned back in Sanhedrin that the Persians, the Goyim of that time, had the notion that those two parts of the body are actually ruled over by two different gods. Obviously, we don't say that, but nevertheless, there is that separation. So therefore, the idea is that everyone talks about but the point is, even within the body itself, you have the higher and the lower part. Anyway, so that everyone's explained based on this whole thing of the blade, that the idea is, therefore, one idea is wearing the belt too high indicates you're giving too much room to the lower, to the lower, less refined part of your body. And therefore, that evokes gvura, and therefore it has to be placed in the proper place. That I've also mentioned in that connection, the famous joke, that they say, that we Jews wear our gautel around our waist. The Christians have their collar they wear it around their neck, so like for them, only the head is the spiritual part of the body. And the Ishmaelim, the Arabs, wear it around the top of their head. Like for them, the whole body is the entire body is a gashmi, it's a lower thing, and Rukhni only exists higher than a person. Anyway, so Reb Levick goes on to say over there that also the idea is, he goes on to say that this is Gadar, being the king of Persia. He explains over there that actually we have a comparison that in a number of places a Chazal makes between the Goyim and the pig. Usually the comparison is with Rome, but here Reb Levick actually points out the name of the king is Gadar, it's spelled here in the Gemara, is actually the same gematria as Chazir. And just as we know that often Chazal is her, the famous thing, that eventually the pig is going to become kosher, it will develop to money pastures and be kosher, the same way. In other words, all Gemara over here is showing that there will come a time when Izgadara and the whole nation that he represents will be refined and become a help to the Jewish people rather than a hindrance. You see a semblance of it in the Gemara over here where he helps Talhuna by Nosson by putting his belt in the proper place.
See that happen.
Yeah. And then one more thing Rav Levick points out over there is that Rav Ashi tells over the story and like doesn't have any particular positive reaction to it because Rav Ashi himself represents Gvura as far as he's concerned. Let's appear in front of the Persian manifesting Gvura by all means. Let there be as much Gvura that descends on the Persians as possible. Whereas a Maimer who comes from the side of Chesed is more pleased by the fact that Izgadar put the belt in the proper place to evoke Chesed, because fine, by all means, let there be Chesed that comes to the Persians as well. Let there, you know, let them also be refined and take their place in Hashem's creation as they should.
Why Rav Ashi was the Gvura?
He explains about Erez, the details about his name and about the difference. I don't remember the exact. Not maybe. Yeah, I think he does relate it to the name from the word Asian. But Eber, by the way, used to quote this. This Gemara a number of times. A lot of, especially during the 80s, and the five mystic explanation where Eber took the thing from what the lady is talking about, turned up the Yitzchak or whatever, and analyzed in detail. That was a lot of tests. In the Mem, that Eber used to quote this story over here repeatedly to express it. In those years, that Eber was very much sure was focusing over and over on Shlemus Ha'aretz and not giving in to the harassment and whatever of the Goyim, about giving away Chorus Mosheh itself. So he's quoted over and over from here, where we see that a Goyish king realizes that the Jewish people are on a higher level, and he himself helps in that. So we see that such things happened before, and such things can happen again, and therefore we don't need to be nervous about their pressure, and just the opposite. It's not the only time. We had at the end of Avodah Zarah also, where Shavuot Malka stuck a knife in the ground 10 times and then cut a slice of Esther and put a Yoda. Yeah, here and there.
But he wanted to eat it for his own benefit.
No, well, there was what he was planning the slice of Esther. You want him to eat it? Yeah, we'll talk about it. But this way, we'll be covered for the thing. But yeah. Okay. All right. Shnan Hossam. Okay. Now getting back to the matter of Chisuv Gadol and Yitzchak Gadol. We discussed yesterday the question, what happens if a Kohen Gadol is wearing fewer clothes than he's supposed to, and what happens if he's wearing more clothes than he's supposed to. So now we're going to get into more of the more clothes. Tanan Hassan, we learn in the Mishnah at the end of the Erevin, Kohen Shalokah Be'etzvoy, if a Kohen injures his finger, Kodach Alev Jemi, he's allowed to, on Shabbos, he's allowed to wind a piece of demi, which is a type of grass, around it on Shabbos, the mikdash, only in the bit mikdash, because even though usually it would be also on Shabbos, because of Zera Zerabon, I mean, Rashi says the reason is because you might come to actually make a medicine for it, you might come to grind the spices for it. Tosfos learns that the reason is because you may do it tightly enough to make blood come out, it could be a malacha. Either way, you're allowed to do it in the mitzvah because in general, the students that are born on don't apply in the mitzvah. Have a loyal medina, but not anywhere else in the country. The imbahoti men are down, but if you're putting on the genin so tightly, and you specifically have in mind that you're doing it in order to get blood out of the wound, you can also then even in the mitzvah or outside of it, it would be also, because that would really be a malacha daraita, a dutch, and that.
The
relevance is Amr of Yehuda Breder of Chia, Moishonu Elegem. So Rabbi Yehuda Breder of Chia says specifically when the Mishnah says you're allowed to put this gemi grass on the wound, that means specifically that. I will tiltil cotton, but if you were instead to use a small tiltil, a tiltil is like a narrow belt, so like a ribbon or a belt or something, if you were to use that instead, then you have a problem having Yitzhak gotten. Then you have a problem because you can't do that even in the dismissus, because then he's wearing too many clothes. He has the five, the four clothes that are in. Now he has a fifth one, the silver cross. That's one opinion. Rabbi Yechanan says no. No, the whole concept of Yitzhak Gadim, of wearing extra clothes, only applies when you're wearing them on the part of the body where the other clothes are supposed to be moved. Because we talked yesterday, not necessarily because of the chitta, because even if you're wearing them over the clothing, there may be a problem because you're wearing it on a part of your body, which is supposed to be covered only with the big degona. But here you're putting it on your finger, so there's not any of the clothes that are coming in that normally cover the finger. But when you have a yitter, then it wouldn't be anything extra, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan says it's not just gemi, you would be allowed to use a silk or cotton as well. However, we'll see soon why the Mishnah specifically mentioned it. Okay. So the question is, the typical Mishnah Chatzitza. Fine, but never mind the question of Yitzhak Gadol.
The question really is, the question really is on both of them. The question, not just primarily the question is on Rabbeinu, where if you're going to say that he's able to do the filter cutting, don't you have a problem of chaptitza? Namely, aside from the fact that there can't be a chaptitza between his body and the clothes, fine, there's no clothes that cover his finger, but there also can't be a chaptitza between his hand and the kelim with which he's doing the avodah. Here, he's wearing a filter cutting and you have a chaptitza. In fact, you have that's what the Gemara can answer. But in fact, you have a story, by the way, that Gemara mentioned in a couple of places, at the end of Christmas, that you have a Kohen Gadol from sometime in the time of the Second Testament, named Yitzchak Ishkar Bar Chai, who used to wear gloves in the Avodah, which is also because you have a Chassidah. And in fact, the Gemara tells us how eventually he was severely punished for it. Anyway, the point is that, so isn't it a Chassidah?
What was his name?
Yitzchak Ishkar Bar Chai. So, don't have a problem with chassidah. Then it's the Gemara. Let's say he's talking about it on his left hand. His left hand he doesn't use for that avodah. Inami, or it could be like you just said, what avodah? Let's say it's in a part of his finger which is not using for that avodah, like his fingertip or whatever. Right. Okay.
No, the fingertip.
Okay, or the back of the finger, whatever the point is. Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. However, the Gemara says, "Pligya de Rav." This that we're saying, that this that Rav Yerchan is saying, that he could even use the filter cotton, that disagrees with what Rav. The Amar Rav Amar. It's like this. The muck of the goddamn, if a Kohen is wearing something else on a part of his body that's supposed to be covered by the big dikohona, I feel a nima achas chesed, even one extra thread that's on his body that separates between his skin and the clothing would be a chesed. Shaloi the muck of the goddamn, whereas if it's in a place that, you know, it's a part of the body where there are no goddamn, for example, the fingers, shalosh al shalosh chesed, only a beggar that is at least 3x3 at boys is enough to make a chassidah, meaning, and actually Rashi says, here we don't really mean chassidah, we mean yitur begadim. Rashi says, because we use the word chassidah before, in connection with one thread, then we use it over here also, but it means the same thing. It means it's not a problem of chassidah in the case of 3x3, because chassidah would be even less than that, and there's no chassidah anyway, because it's not a place where there's clothing, it means yitur begadim, he's wearing extra clothing. So only if it's 3x3, possibly kind of in a chassidah. If it's smaller than that, then it's not a chassidah. So now, what does that mean? Now, is it? Well, that's what he has to come up with from Israel Bay, apparently, because usually we say that only 3x3 is the minimum shield for something to be considered a beggar. Less than that, and it's not considered a beggar. Okay. So now, we have so far two opinions. We have the Yehuda Brezid Apia, and we have the Yehuda. So, let's consider, is Rava necessarily disagreeing with both of them? There's no question that Rava's statement is disagreeing with what Rav Yechanan said. Because Rav Yechanan said that if it's Shloi B'mach of Godin, there's no such thing as Yitzhak Godin, period. Even if you're wearing a larger thing, as long as it's not a chassidah, as long as it's not a chassidah with the avodah, like if you're wearing it on his left hand, Rava is saying anything Sholosh or Sholosh is enough to make the Yitzhak Godin, even if it's on his left hand. So Rava is no question arguing with Rav Yechanan. The question is, do we necessarily have to say that Rava also is arguing with Rav Yehuda Berei de Rabchia, who said that if you use a filter cotton, which on the face of it is less than 3x3 at large, he said it's no good, because you have Yitzhak Zadid. Rava seems to say that not. Do we have to say, therefore, that Rava represents a third opinion? And we would rather not, because as much as possible, even if we have to have a machlokes, we would rather not have more opinions than necessary. So the answer is no. Shiny, filter cotton, the caution. No, a filter cotton Rava would agree is different because it's a beggar of its own. It's made for decoration. It's made in that size. Therefore, it specifically, as opposed to shalosh, means it's a scrap cloth or something. So therefore, that's different. Rava would agree that a filter cotton is significant enough on its own, even though it's less than 3x3, to be a chassid. Because it's specifically made in that size, and it's made for decoration. It's made for noise. It's not something.
What is it exactly?
It's like a small band or a small ribbon or something. But it's nicely made and decorated and whatever. Yeah, and then in this case, yeah, you could use it for an injured finger, but also you could use it. Gemara mentions in other places. Gemara mentions a silk or cotton being used as like a band or a belt or something. In Socha, for example, the Gemara asks the question. We know that the Socha's clothing is the top edge of her clothing is supposed to be ripped to uncover her heart.
during the whole sota process over there. And then afterwards, they take a rope and they tie it around her clothes to prevent them from slipping off. So the Gemara discusses over there, if they don't have a rope, could they use a sota cotton instead? Right. So that's what a sota cotton is. It's like a narrow strip or a band or ribbon or something. Yeah. But it's made for that purpose as opposed to...
So in other words, we don't have to say there are three opinions over here. We can say like this.
The Mishnah would say anything that's Mamakam Gadim is not Yitzhak Gadim, no matter how big it is. Rav Yehuda Bredin,
you can say that. You can say that only that the Yitzhak Gadim only is defined only if, first of all, we have the opinion of the Rambam yesterday, who says that anyway, Yitzhak Gadim is only if you wear an extra one of the four clothes of a Kohen. So how he would understand this Gemara is a whole other issue. Again, he may understand, as I mentioned yesterday, or from a verbal salvation, that the Rambam may understand there's three different issues. There's Chatzitza, there's Yitzhak Gadim, and then there's a third issue sort of in between them, which is that there's an issue about wearing extra things that he shouldn't be. It's not Yitzhak Gadim necessarily that would pass away Avodah, but nevertheless, he's not supposed to do it. Something like that. Anyway, the point is that, so again, we have Rabbi Yochanan, who said that no matter what size it is, it's not the Machim Gadim, it's not a problem. We have Rabbi Yehuda Breder Priya, who says that any size beged, if it's an actual beged made for the purpose, then it would be a problem. And we have Rava saying, fine.
We would assume that Rava is saying, I agree with that. However, he adds another detail as well. It's not purpose-made as a beggar. If, let's say, just a scrap of cloth or something, then only if it's shalosh would it be a problem. Less than that, it wouldn't be a problem.
Less than this.
So the only reason, according to Rava, that silk or cotton would be a problem is because it's purpose-made like that. It's made decoratively like that to be less than that size.
And 3x3?
3x3, it doesn't matter whether it's decorative or not, Rava would say.
Rava.
Yeah. Okay. So you only have two opinions.
Mishnakri, now another version of this. Lishnakri na Amri Law, they say another version of this discussion, starting out as follows. Omer of Yehuda Bereger Kriya, the Shonam Kenny, again, start out by Rabbi Yehuda Bereger Kriya saying that the Kohen who injured his finger is only allowed to put Gemi on it. And by the way, I mean, in principle, he doesn't have to put anything on it. In principle, he could just do the Avoida with an injured finger. However, Rashi mentions over there in...
That wouldn't be,
because the blood of the Kohen is in the basin. But as you said, the reason why he wouldn't do it is because of the gnai. It's not respectful for Hashem to be walking around in this mikveh with an injured finger when it should be covered by the gnai.
But it wouldn't be a problem if you bleed or say blood.
Nah, first of all, the blood of the Kohen would not be in there. Okay. Anyway, so again, we start out the second version is that the Buddha Brazil of Priya says, well, Shana Rala Gemi, the Mishnah is saying that he's allowed to put the Gemi grass on his wound. I will silt or cotton choices, but if he were to use instead of silt or cotton of ribbon, then it would be a chafisa, and therefore we have a problem. But if Dirichan and Amalai on the chafisa, the prophet of Shalosh, El of Rokim Godim. Now, the second version is a different, in the second version, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the same thing as he did before. Rabbi Dirichan in the second version is saying something different. When do we say that? It's a chatzitza. The pachat, mishalos al shalos, when a thing is less than 3x3, el of a mokad mugadim, only if it's in a place, a part of the body which is supposed to be covered by the big dick. Before you just said anything, that nothing that's in there is a place, that only the mokad mugadim, anything the mokad mugadim is used to mugadim without saying a sign. Here he's saying that if even if it's mokad mugadim, then so here he's saying like this. If it's the mokad mugadim, then yes, even less than 3x3. Which is basically what he said before. I will shalom the mokum begadim, but if it's in a place that the clothing is not being worn, then unlike what he said before, that's not kosher at all. In the second version, he says like what Rava said in the first version. Shalosh or shalosh kosher. There's only 3x3 words be kosher. Kosher is not in a chesed. Less than that, and it would be a chesed. Again, when you're actually not using chesed per se, we're talking that this is begadim. We're using the word chesed because we used it before.
Vahainu de Rava, in which case, according to that second version, then Rava is not disagreeing with Rabbi Yechanan. In fact, Rava and Rabbi Yechanan are saying exactly the same thing.
The reason why he's saying that
this is the second version of what Rabbi Yechanan said.
Yeah, the second version.
Because in the first version, what Rabbi Yechanan is before, but in the first version, we said that Rava disagrees with Rabbi Yechanan. In the second version, we have a different version of what Rabbi Yechanan said. We want to present both versions. We need to know what was said. So in the second version, Rabbi Yechanan is agreeing with what Rava said.
Now, the question then becomes, Omer of Chisda, Divine of the Rabbah, Omer of Chisda. So this agrees with what Rabbah said of name of Rabbah. Well, then the question becomes, Lema Pligad, the Rabbah, today, the Rabbah.
In that case, fine. Do we still have to say that Rav Yochanan and Rava, who both said the same thing, you would necessarily have to say in the second version that they're disagreeing with Rav Yehuda Breder Priya, who said that a tzotzol cotton would be chayshev, and a tzotzol cotton is less than 3 by 3. And again, the answer is, shiny tzotzol cotton, the chayshev. Again, we could answer that a tzotzol cotton is a special case because it's important. Rav Yochanan and Rava would be talking about stam of a piece of cloth that's not decorative or whatever. That there you need 3 by 3 for it to be significant, because in general in halacha, less than 3 by 3 etzvos is not considered significant.
So they would agree on...
But they might agree with Rabbi Yehuda, Breder Chia, that a tzotzol cotton is a special thing.
And therefore
that a tzotzol cotton would in fact be a problem. So now the question is, all of Rabbi Yochanan, my area again. Okay, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said, according to Rabbi Yochanan, in the first version, the Gemara may not be saying that, the Gemara is not saying that, that it's not asking whether Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda Breder Priya. Clearly they do. The question is whether Rava is necessarily disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda Breder Priya. So in this second version, Rava definitely agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, but he would furthermore add, how, there is the detail, though, that a tzotzol cotton would be a problem. So Rabbi Yochanan would not agree. So you still have two opinions, but you still have two opinions regarding tzotzol cotton. You have Rava mostly agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, that usually it is 3 by 3. However, in the case of a tzotzol cotton, he holds like Rabbi Yochanan.
So he only disagrees on the tzotzol cotton.
Right. So the question then becomes, well, Rabbi Yochanan. No, well, you have two opinions ultimately. Well, you have Rabbi Yochanan, you have Rabbi Yehuda, and you have Rava, who partially agrees with Rabbi Yochanan and partially agrees. It's not really three opinions, but no, it means that in different details,
there's on one, there's one and on the other.
Yeah, but okay, fine. It's not really a completely different opinion. Just like in the first one, we said that Rava is not necessarily disagreeing with in the first one, we said Rava was definitely disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan, but we can make him agree with Rabbi Yehuda Breder Priya. Over here, we would say in a certain detail, he agrees with Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, but basically what we're saying is Rava is a combination of the other two opinions. It's not really a third separate opinion. Okay. But the question becomes a little bit different. Okay, according to the Yerkanon, who says that a silk or cotton is not a problem, then you have to ask my reason, then why, as you asked before, why was the Mishnah specifically mentioned the current of Demi on the woman? Lishma in and silk or cotton, let it tell us a silk or cotton, which would be a bigger chiddush. The answer is, Rabbi Yochanan would say, the reason why the mission chose to use the word gemi is because it wants to tell us something. Incidentally, gemi mati. You should know that gemi is something that heals a wound. Some kind of reed or some kind of grass. Whatever it is exactly. The point is, it has wound healing. The Tosfos points out, the one I mentioned elsewhere, the idea of Moshe Chachamim Marseille, the wording that the Chachamim used is a healing, and there were many times the Chachamim will specifically phrase things in a certain way
in order to teach us incidental things, like things that are good for your health and other such things. But here, Rabbi Yochanan would say that the Mishnah chose to use the word gemi, even though it could have used a sole or cotton, and told us a bigger chiddush in halacha, because it wanted to tell us this Moshen Chacham in Marfe. It wanted to inform us, you should know, if you have a wound, what's good for it? Gemi. Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, so exactly. Exactly.
The Rambam actually passed in like the Rambam passed in over here like
that a tzotzol cotton is a chatzitza. So what he says is like this: if you have a beged in a place where the begadim aren't normally worn, so then if 3 by 3 at bars, then it's no good.
Less than that, not. If it's also cotton, then it's significant all by itself. But then he
goes on to say, in the next halacha,
he says that when a kohen is putting on gemi or a beggar that's less than 3 by 3, as long as there's not a chitza
between his skin and the keli, which the Ravid asks on that, you just said. So that's the Ravid asks on that. You just said in the previous halacha that a silk or cotton is important enough to be a chitzah on its own. Right. So the answer is the notes of Kalim on Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah, and others talk about that there's essentially, when we say over here that, again, when we mention over here the concept that Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda says the word chotzos, does he mean specifically a chatzitza, or does he mean yitur b'gadim? So again, Rashi has said it doesn't mean a chatzitza, it means yitur b'gadim, so as long as you don't have the yitur b'gadim issue, then you're good. The Rambam apparently would learn that way also. The Rambam would understand chatzitza in the simple sense, that it means it's a chatzitza, and therefore that's why he asked someone that. Okay. Fine. Boy, Rava. So now Rava asks, here's a question, as far as chatzitza involves in clothing.
What if air gets in between his skin and the body? The body must be there. The body must be there. Obviously, it's somewhere. The point is, the body must be
directly on his skin. So therefore, if they're a little bit loose,
and therefore they're not lying directly on his skin, so they puffed up while he's doing that.
Oh, the skin in there? Yeah.
That cannot be a chassid.
Well, that's the question. No, what do you mean? That's the way it
is. You can have that touch, and obviously there's some air molecules between them. We're not talking about that, but it's not like they're
visibly separated, where you don't feel the fabric on your skin. The question is, al b'sored v'ein in b'halakha, do you need, as the pasuk says, that the begadim should be literally on his skin, and then you don't have that, because it's impossible. It just means they need to make them very form-fitting.
So they're very tight.
Yeah.
But even then, it doesn't guarantee each other a little piece of garment, maybe not exactly on the skin.
Why? Make them tight. If you make them,
basically skin tight, then no. Then
people change sizes.
Then you'll have to get fitted for a new beggar.
On a day-to-day basis.
No, day to people are changing size on a day-to-day basis. Okay.
Look at when you put filling on and you take them off.
You change your skin is on.
Literally on his skin, and you don't have that. Or do you have a Jericho Bishop of Kach, or maybe that's the normal way of wearing things. As you said, sometimes you have like that, and therefore it'd be okay. Another question, Kina Maushat. Well, we don't know the answer yet. Wait. Kina Maushat. It's another question. Would a louse be a chassid? If he has a louse on it, if he has a louse, a bug on his skin. So, Mesa, like the Bari law, if the louse is dead, then there's no question about it. Chayim. Obviously, it'd be a chassid. Because you can't consider it part of him. There's no question it's a chassid. Yeah, divide chayim, because it's definitely a chassid. Chayim, the question is, what if the louse is alive? Me, I'm in and given the osav avla. Do we say since it's able to move back and forth, the visit, so it's just a normal part, it's as if it was part of his skin. Given to coffee a lot, or maybe because you don't like having you would rather not have a louse on your skin, therefore maybe chaser, therefore maybe it's a chassidah. In general, we have a concept that a chassidah, part of the definition of a chassidah, is when you mind it, he's there. So, yeah, okay. Another question, offer maushi yachid. What about, would dirt be a chassidah? What do you mean, offer body? Of course, dust would be a chassidah. Ella Ova Ophamah. Well, so that's dirt. So the question is Ella Ova Ophamah. What if you have just like a thin layer of dust? Like there's so you don't even feel it, but it's still there. Dark the any mouth for that. It's very thin, you don't even feel it, but nevertheless it's there. Well, that's the question. Another
one.
No, but then you could on the other hand it's not resisting. It's not so you can't consider dust as being like the story where there's a live louse so can move around. Maybe it is.
But that's
part of the definition, but it's not the whole definition. Again, with a louse, if it's moving around, we have reason to think that maybe it's not a chassidah. On the other hand, since he minds it, maybe it is. With dust, it doesn't move around. Obviously it doesn't. It's stuck to his skin. Another question, Beis HaShechi Ma'oshiyot. What about air near his armpit? In other words, again, the clothes are supposed to be fairly cool. Let's say the sleeves were made too wide.
They can wear things like this.
Right. That's what we're asking.
That'd be big Nikuna.
Right. That's what we're asking. So in other words, now you have another example. Before we were talking about where they were basically form-fitting, but then they puffed up a little bit. Here we're asking, what about if the sleeve was made too wide so that it's not directly in contact with his arm?
Again, al-basara ra'in b'halakha. Again, you say it has to be al-basara, and therefore it's not. Again, you can ask the question, is that the normal way of wearing clothes, that the armholes and the sleeves are not exactly form-fitting around the armpit. Also, what happens if the Kohen stuck his hand into his bosom? So in other words, he sticks it in under his clothing, and therefore you have his hand between the clothing and his body, between the clothing and the rest of his skin. Again, the question is, can you say that part of his group is choices on another part of his group? Or maybe not. One part of the group can't be choices on a different part. For certain purposes in halacha, by the way, we say it can't. For example, one of the din is, if a person doesn't have a yarmulke, a person doesn't have what to cover his head with, he's not allowed to cover his head with his hand in order to say bracha or whatever.
You cannot say when a woman goes to the mikveh and she puts hand on her arm, it's going to be a chatitza. You never said that.
No, but you have to have royal vs. mayim. Actually, if she clutches it too tightly, it might be. But here, anyway, the point is, it has to be the question is, clothing is supposed to be al-basara. So is his hand being in the way over there? Is that getting in the way of al-basara or not? In the case of a woman in the mikveh, or a man for that matter, during the times when the halacha has to go to the mikveh, not just in shum minhag, then you have to make sure there's no chatitza. If he puts his hand loosely, then fine, it's not a problem, because water could get in there. But here we're talking. Okay. Another question. Nima maushatomos. What about with a thread, a loose thread, on his skin?
Wait.
We have a bunch of questions over here. Wait. Okay. So another question is, what if you have a thread that's on its skin and underneath the big corner, would that be a chatitza? What kind of a question is that? Nima vadech, right? So of course a thread that came from somewhere else would be a chatitza, just like any jerk. No, elan nima medudelis mahu. Rather, the question is, what if you have a thread that's hanging loose from the beged itself? So one end of it is still in the weave, but one end of it came loose and is on its skin. Would that be a chatitza? So all of those, the Gemara doesn't answer any of these questions. Therefore, we have a sofer. Effectively, it's teku. The Rambam passes with all of them that it's a sofer. However, the avodah is still kosher with the yeved. And the notes of Caleb asked why, if it's fake of their eyes, it should be a chumrah. And the answer is, because if you would have said the avodah is possible, then it would come out that you might be bringing chul and ma'azor. Because if you have the avodah was done on a carbon, and then you're going to say, misophic, that it's possible, you're going to be making the person bring another carbon, and that might not be a valid carbon.
Number one, and number two, you couldn't do any avodah. It's always a suffix.
No, well, that's not the point. The point is, no, you would have to be careful. You're supposed to be careful.
And if you don't have one thread coming from your garment,
so you check. Not one thread, one loose thread. So you check when you're putting them on. You check carefully. You actually had there were personnel in the business. There's plenty of threads involved. You had people in charge. You had people in charge over there of maintaining the wardrobe and dressing the clothing and whatever. So yeah, that's part of their job. Mustama was checking for these kinds of things. Yeah. Okay. Another question. Boy, Marbaravashi. Just the side of the big thing. What if his hair comes out into his clothes? So Rashi understands that the question is, what if, in other words, the hair of his head is so long that it goes down and part of it comes in between the kaponis and his skin? So would that be a chatitza? The question is, side of the big thing. Is his hair considered to that extent part of his body? Or lack of gufa dummy, or is it maybe not considered similar, but it's not quite the same thing. Or maybe it's not considered part of his body, and therefore but it's considered, but for certain purposes in halacha, we do consider the hair to be separate from the body. For example, again, as far as the minimum chatitza when it comes to going mikveh, mina torda, for certain purposes, we consider a chatitza midaraisa, something that's only a chatitza, either if you mind it or if it comes most to the body. But the hair is considered separate from the body in that regard. Namely, if you have something that covers or otherwise blocks most of the hair, then that's considered a chatitza, even though it's not most of the body.
So why not ask a more simple question? What about the hair on your arms?
Fine, that's a natural part of his body.
Well, so the hair of his head.
Yes, the hair of his head is supposed to stay outside his clothing. Here the question is, going down, hanging down into his clothing. In other words, he has long hair in the back. And he's actually not supposed to. It's actually one of the Polish masks. How we have in the question in the first place, the United States. The one answer is, let's say he did end up having longer hair than he's supposed to. Fine, maybe he may be chayav for doing that, for growing his hair too long, but nevertheless, you can still ask whether it's a hodeh is kosher.
But another possibility they don't mention is maybe we're talking about not his hair of his head, but rather his beard. You could have a similar problem. His beard is long and then gets into the question.
But if he says it goes under his skin.
That's what we're asking. But the Rambam has a whole different understanding of this last question anyway. The Rambam's understanding of the question is, if there's a hole in one of his midrashim and hair from his body sticks out of it, now if there's a hole in that if the actual skin was visible, then it would be possible. We said yesterday, the quote was this. Over here, if the hair is sticking out, is the hair considered part of the body in that sense, and therefore it's like part of his body is exposed, and therefore that avodah is possible, or maybe not.
You don't need a hole for the hair to go through the bigger. The hair could go through the big head without a hole.
Right, but that's the question. In other words, if you have hair sticking out through a small hole, that could
get into the big head without sticking out.
Yeah, okay, but fine. We're asking if it sticks out. Right. So tied to Gufa Jami, I like Gufa Jami. Is his hair considered part of his body and therefore would be the part of his body is exposed and avodah is possible or not? Again, it's a suffix and therefore la losa, we're makel.
So
we're makel, we said. We're makel because, as we said, because it's impossible, but because you would have the problem, again, that you might end up bringing chulin la'azara. You might end up, somebody brought a korban, and the korban did it with one of these things going on. If you're going to say it's possible, you would make him bring another korban, but that korban may not be a valid korban, because the first one may have been valid, and you'd be bringing chulin la'azara, and you can't do that. Okay. Another question. Tefillin ma'ushia chutzu. What about our tefillin ha'chitza? If you wear them together with the bittikon. So we have to consider. I'll leave a demand of a laila lav man tefillin who, according to the opinion of the Gemara discusses in two tefillin, right? You have the shoyad and you have the shodosh. The shoyad is in the place of the beggar. The shodosh now. We're discussing generically. Then we're going to get into more specifically this one. Tefillin ma'ushia chutzu. The point of the question is that maybe with Sodashi again explained, the question is not really complete, but the question is did you go? That he's wearing extra clothing. Again, for that to an extent, do we consider it a beggar? Tosfos anyway disagrees with that. And says that no, because the Gemara is later on in the city, between the Shoyad and the Shorosh, if it was a matter of Yitzhak Gadim, either one of them would be a problem. No, Tosfos learns the question is as far as Chafitza.
The question is, first of all,
we're going to see there is going to be a distinction between the Shoyad and the Shorosh. But the other question is, since you're supposed to be wearing tefillin all the time, and as Rashi says, chavivus of the mitzvah, the precious mitzvah of the mitzvah. Why not? In those days, many people used to wear
tefillin.
Why not?
What would be the problem?
Yeah, anyway, Zaki explains on the next line of the Gemara that what it is maybe tefillin because of a chavivus, because of the question of the mitzvah, maybe they should be considered like part of your book. Therefore, they wouldn't be considered a chavivus. You should look. So let's analyze, Gemara says. I'll limit them under. Now, you have two different opinions that Gemara discusses in Erevin, and eventually we'll have them in office. That's the Shem that Gemara discusses. Do you wear tefillin at night? So I'll leave a demander of a Lila Lab Mamsilin. We had it in Erevin.
Yeah.
So, we discussed it over there. Yeah. The question was whether you wear them at night and also whether you wear them on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So, I'll leave a demander of a Lila Lab Mamsilin who according to the opinion that nighttime is not the time for wearing tefillin, well then, loy tibayla. Then there's no question. Then tefillin will certainly be a chatzitza. Because given to Laila Chaiti, since they would definitely be a chatzitza at night, because at night you can't say they're chaviv, because you're not accomplishing the mitzvah then therefore, yom nami chaiti, therefore by day also, they would have to be a chatzitza.
If by night,
then they have to be called. And Rashi says like this, most avodas can't be done at night. The major avoda that you can do at night is burning, not the carbon paper. No, we're talking about avoda, we're not talking about eating carbon. Avoda of korbanos, the major avoda that can be done by night is burning the remaining pieces of the korbanos, hektar korbanos by volume, which can be done all night. Now, for most purposes, we find that the avodas by night are more lenient than the ones by day, less fewer rules apply to them. But if you were going to tell me, because children aren't born by night,
Therefore, you're not allowed to wear tefillin during the night avodah, so you have tefillin, but you're allowed to wear them during the day avodah. You'd wind up with a chumrah of the night avodah over the day avodah, and you can't do that. So logically, if you can't wear tefillin at night, and they'd be a chafitza, then you wouldn't be able to wear them by day. That's not actually saying that. The question is, the question would be, according to the opinion that nighttime is a valid time for wearing tefillin, that you are makai in the mitzvah wearing them at night as well. So then the question is mine. Mitzvah de gufei chayit, would we say a mitzvah that's on your own body, which you wear on your body, and therefore has a certain chavivus, it has a preciousness, therefore maybe, but nevertheless chayit, is it maybe a chafitza, because after all it's not part of your body, or lo chayit, so maybe it's not a chafitza, because it would be considered like an extension of your body. So that's what Zera is asking. Well, he galgal milser, eventually the matter rolled along, in other words, it was passed along from one person to another, eventually the question was brought to the Rami. Omalei, and he answers, Talmud Aruch Kubiyadenu, we have a Beferisha teaching, an arranged teaching in our hands that says Tefillin Chositzes, that Tefillin are Chatzitza, and therefore the Kohen cannot wear them during the Avodah. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Kohenim Bavodos, and the Kohenim while they're doing the Avodah, Olevim B'duchonen, and the Levim while they're on the Duchon, to sing the Shira in the Beis Mikdash, the Yisrael B'ma'am Modern, and the Yisraelim doing their Maimed. We know that the Maimed is, they had divisions of Jews who would come to the Beit HaMikdash to be there, to be present as representatives of the Jewish people when the Korban of Sibur are being brought.
By the way, they had to be there, the Yisraelim?
Yes, so this is a Sakana that goes back, the Mishnah in Tainus says the Sakana goes back to the time of the Nevi'im Rishonim, David and Shmuel, that period. So it's not Daraita, it's a Takana of the Nevi'im, but the powerful Takana that the Mishnah in Tainus explains. Since the Korbanot Sibur are brought on behalf of the Jewish people, for example, the Korban Talmid, and by right the person needs to be there when their Korban is offered, however, the entire Jewish people can't be expected to be there twice a day. Therefore, we have the Anshei Maimer who stand in for them. So some of them actually come to the Beis Mikdash and are present during the Avodah to watch. They're supposed to be here. Others of them, the ones who are not able to come to Yerushalayim because they were too far away or whatever, they, when it comes their week, they gather in their local shul and they have a special seder of tefillah and a special seder of Kriyas HaTorah and a special set of fasts, etc.
They have all the korbanos in one area?
No, not all of one area. What do you mean? I mean, the whole Jewish people. No, what they did is they divided the Jewish people into 24 groups.
Right.
For each group, they appointed Anshei Maimed. They appointed people from all over the country who represent that group. And then the ones who lived closer to Yerushalayim would actually come to Yerushalayim, and the ones who didn't would stay in their cities and do this whole thing. And the next week, the next group would take over and do it. Kohen and Bava Justin, or Levi and B'duchon, and the Yisrael of Ma'amodon, all of them, Turin Minat Tfila, they're all potter from davening, because they, Rashi says, because they can't have kavana, because they're distracted by their avodah or whatever they're supposed to be doing. Uminat tefillin, and they're potter from tefillin.
Because, again, they're always, so Rashi says actually, and they're telling the problem of kavana, in parentheses, which means maybe it's not from Latin, but the reason why they're potter from tefillin, Rashi doesn't, because they're the usual rule.
Or is it the mitzvah, potter from a mitzvah? When they're occupied with one mitzvah, they're potter from another one. Here they're occupied with the mitzvah of the avodah, or the shira, or the maimed, or whatever. Therefore, yeah. So now we say, no, they're potter from tefillin.
My lab and you on any place.
The whole lab means
they're potter.
But now
for that, I'm still going to be fine. Then it's not. You mean you're going to have to? No. But what I mean is that the Kohen are not allowed to put on because they'll be a potter. Or you can do the brother, but the same thing. It is still a potter. But the question is not sort of, then why is the right even the word they're potter? Absolutely, by the way, because they're also
being a brother. The answer is Kivin Dikra. Yeah, yeah. Kivin, that applies to the whole chapter. Given the ikal of being the Israelim, the Lamasni, like also, because you also have Braisa is mentioning together, Koyanim and Levim and Israelim. Now Levim and Israelim, we can't say Osir. Why should they be Osir? They don't have anything that would be a Krav Machatita. So you can't say Osir, Mishum Hachi, Tana Peturin. Therefore, the Braisa uses the word Peturin, even though when it comes to the Koyanim, it may mean they're actually Osir. Because we're using the word Asurim generically. All three groups are Osir. The Koyanim can't use of Asurim, generically for all three of them. You have to say all three of them are Potter. The Kohenim, in addition, are actually Osir because it'd be a Sif. Okay, the question is, Valtanya, but we learn in another Braisa, Eminichon, Einin Chosidus. But no, if a Kohen does wear Tefillin, then it's not a Chosidus. We should try to reconcile that again.
The answer is like Kasha, Hod Yad, Hod Rosh. One's talking about the Shoyad, one's talking about the Sholosh. The Shoyad would be a chatitza because of necessity it has to be between the clothing and its skin. The Sholosh is not a chatitza, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. Actually, it's interesting, by the way. The Rashba has an opinion that says that you, that actually you would be allowed, he says like this. When it comes to the Shoyad, you're not supposed to wear it over your clothes because the Pasuk says on the Shoyad, it should be for you a sign, implying the it's not meant for others. So therefore, it should be covered by your sleeve. As opposed to the Shorosh, it doesn't say such a thing. So therefore, the Rashba learns you would be allowed to put the tefillin Shorosh on over the Gadim. And therefore, it wouldn't be a problem.
Meaning no one's not known to you.
You see it, practically speaking, they do see it. But it's not meant to be out on public display. Unlike the Shorosh, which is meant to be out on...
So the
point is, in other words, if you wear the Shoyad on your sleeve, then you're violating that. You're making it lacherim lois. You're making it as publicly visible to everybody, which it shouldn't be. So in fact, there's a Mishnah in Megillah. So a Mishnah in Megillah actually says that if a person puts on a Shoyad on a sleeve, then ha-reizim gerach ha-chitsoinim. Then he's acting like the chitsoinim, like whatever it is, like some people who don't follow the chacham, whatever chitsoinim means.
Right.
But with the Shorosh, the Rashba learns that you would be allowed to put on the Shorosh on top of a cap or something. So therefore, over here, they can be wearing their nefes, their turban, bas, whatever their turban, and wear the tefillin over it, and it wouldn't be a problem.
So the chal only applies to the yad?
What? Yeah, because the chal l'chol always talking about what? Or the chal and bein. But bein necha just means your eye, but l'chol always talking about chal. The word l'chol is extra. So therefore, it teaches us that the Shoyad has to be in a way that's more or less concealed. The Shorosh is supposed to be visible. So therefore, so the Rashba learned that the Shorosh should be able to put on over the garden. And that would work with our Gemara. We don't know about this. I mean,
some people
actually put it on over a cap.
No, they cover with the garment.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, yeah, the minhag is not like the Rashba. The other Rishonim disagree with the Rashba, and the minhag is not like that. The Shorosh should also be on your actual head, or on your hair, on your actual head. However, they do say, to a certain extent, you can have, for example, if let's say a person has a cold, and they need to keep their head covered, and the alternative would be for them not to wear tefillin at all, then you can wear like a thin cap or something, and then wear the Shorosh over it. But preferably, you're not supposed to. Anyway, so what would be with our Gemara over here? So again,
put tefillin on her garments?
Women in general don't put on tefillin in the first place.
They can.
In theory, yes, but practically speaking, no, for a variety of reasons, including the question that it may be beggar-ish, it may be a man, it may be a masculine garment. So, yeah, that's a whole other issue. Yeah, it's an exception, not Gruria. Don't say Gruria. It says that Michal Bastrol is put on tefillin. Fine, Michal Bastrol is a one figure in Jewish history. You don't think? Anyway. So the question is, Maishna Biyad, so why is it different with the Shoyad, just the Yuba Shabasore, where it says that the clothing of the Kohen, the Kohen is supposed to be directly on his skin, Shaloyah Hidava Kohen is Bein Levein Vistare, there shouldn't be anything between the clothing and his skin, and if you wear the Shoyad, then it'll be in the way. The Rosh Nami, what about the Shorosh? The Sam Tamas Nefes Arosh. The Pasuk says you should put the turban on his head, also implying there shouldn't be a Chesed. The answer is Tana, we learn in a Braisa. The Kohen Gadol's hair was visible between the tzitz, which he wore on his forehead, and the tznefes, which he wore on his head. There was a patch of hair visible between them. Why should he be shaved? Over there, he would put on tefillin on that patch. So in other words, the Kohen Gadol would have the tzitz on his forehead. Then you would have the tznefes would be higher up on his head, and the space in between is where he'd wear tefillin. And therefore, there's not a problem with chatzitza. The tefillin are over here, the tznefes is up to you. Neither one is on top of the other. Therefore, there's no problem. And with the
hair, it's not a chatzitza.
So the hair, no, of course not. So just the same way as with the No, that's different when the hair is sticking out or whatever. The normal hair that's supposed to be there obviously is not chatzitza. Again, you know, the kind of not to shave his body before he puts that in a bigger corner. So that's what it is. Also, Tosfos points out, also the point is that now the Kohen Gadol was wearing the tzitz, and according to many Rishonim that Amman, for example, learned this way, the tzitz was actually not that Amman, the Rashi learned this way, that the tzitz was, we know the tzitz was held in place with strings of tzitzis, of the samtaris, of silk tzitzis. Rashi learns that there were three of them, one at each end of the tzitz and one in the middle. So Tosfos points out, according to what the Gemara is saying over here, you would have to say you were allowed to have the string from the tzitz going over the tefillin and then going to the back of his head, that wouldn't be considered a tzitz. As long as the tzitz itself is on his bare skin.
The tzitz was a plate
made out of gold that went across his forehead.
Golden plate,
but it was held in place with blue dyed woolen string, dyed blue.
It was circular?
No, it was semi-circular. It went around, it went from one end, from one ear to the other. It went like this.
Okay.
So it had to be held in place.
Right.
The Rashi learns that it was held in place using three strings.
Right.
One at one end, one at the other end, and one in the middle, and then they all reached around to the back and tied them
around. Over the string.
So Tosfos is pointing out the one in the middle would have had to go over the string, but that would have been okay. That's what the Gemara is telling us over here. Then you'd have problems with the chafitza. According to the Rashba, it wouldn't be a problem. But according to everybody else, where the tefillin is supposed to be directly on your skin or on your hair, then yes, it would be a problem, and that's why you'd have to put the cord over it. Yeah.
The
Rashba's opinion is that you're allowed to put the shalosh on top of something else. You're allowed to wear it on top of the hat, for example. This is, by the way, this sort of thing is why the Gemara talks about elsewhere that the regular Kohenim and the Kohen Gadol would wear their turbans slightly differently. The Kohen Gadol needed room on his head for the tzitz and the tefillin and his mitznefes. Therefore, his mitznefes, he had to tie a little narrower to cover a little bit less of his head, as opposed to the regular Kohenim didn't have a tzitz. All they had was tefillin and their kibbutz, their turban. Therefore, they can make the turban cover more of their head. Yeah. But anyway, so that's that then.
The tzitz has the same size for the Kohen Gadol?
No, the tzitz, the regular Kohen doesn't wear the tzitz.
Right.
Regular Kohenim don't wear the tzitz. It's one of the four extra regalim of the Kohen Gadol. Okay, so that's the bottom line. Is the Kohenim
between
the same size for all of them. Okay, so that's then. So the bottom line is the Kohenim are not allowed to wear tefillin shor yad during their avodah because it would be chatzitza, but they can wear tefillin shor rosh. Next, let's go on to the next one in the Mishnah. We're done now with Yitur Begadim, with wearing extra clothes, so Mechutzah Begadim, the ones who are wearing too few. So now the next one in the Mishnah said Mechutzah Kippurim, that of a Mechutzah Kippurim, who's dealt to bring his Korbanos to be fully tahor, is not allowed to do the Avodah, and if he does, he passes it. Menolam, where do we know that from? Amar Rav Huna, Amar Krah, because the Pasuk says, in connection with one of the Mechutzrei Kapara, is a Yoledes, a woman who gave birth, where she has to bring Korbanos 40 or 80 days after the birth, until then she's a Mechutzrei Kapara. The Pasuk says, V'chiper alayach koin v'tahera, the Kohen should make Kapara for her, and she will be Tahor. So Tahor, on the Klal Sheet's name, implying that up until that point, she was to a certain extent Tomei. And we said before that Kohen is Tomei, we learned the other day that Kohen is Tomei, who does that Avodah, is Mechala. So therefore, Mechutzah Kippurim is in that category as well, because the Pasuk implicitly calls him Tommy.
He's not fully Tommy,
but he's a certain limit, enough that he can't eat Kodshim and he can't go into the Bais HaMikdash, and also that he can't do the Avodah. Yeah. What about the Shaloi Rechut Yodayim V'Raglayim? The Mishnah had said that a Kohen didn't wash his hands and feet, is not allowed to do the Avodah, and if he does, he passes it. How do we know that? After as we said yesterday or 2 days ago, we had a Gzera Shava from the word Chukah, where it said by Mechutzah B'Godim, where it said that the big kahuna should be for them Mechukas Olam, by washing their hands and feet. It also says it should be Lechok Olam, so we learn a Gzera Shava, that's what applies to one applies to the other, and therefore both of them are Mechal.
What do we mean by
that as long as the Bais HaMikdash exists and the Bais HaMikdash will exist again, then it's in effect. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to be ongoing, but it has to be permanent in the sense that it will be back that way when there's a Bais HaMikdash. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to expand a bit. Now we're going to talk about, and then in the next couple of blocks, we're going to talk about the dinim of rechitzas yudayim v'raglayim, the dinim of the kohenim washing their hands and feet. So turn it up on, and we learn in a braisa. Now we have like this: the regular kohenim, as well as the kohen gadol, do the kiddush yudayim v'raglayim. They wash their hands and feet every day before they start doing the avodah. The kohen gadol also has on Yom Kippur. There's additional times that he has to tovel and wash his hands and feet. There's 5 times on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol tovels, and 10 times during the day he does Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. Every time, before and after he tovels, each time there's a Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim.
On Yom Kippur.
So, turn on, we learn in the Braita. The Kohen Gadol Shalei Tovol Shalei Kiddush Ven Beged LeBeged Ven Avodah LaAvodah. If the Kohen Gadol did not do these tefillos and did not do these kiddushim, between changing from one set of clothes to the other, which we know he changed back and forth between the 8 clothes with the gold and the 4 clothes that are all linen, Ubein avoda la avoda, between one segment of the avoda and the next. But Ovar, and he did the avoda, avodotic sheira, his avoda is the dieved kosher. But the echad kohen gadol, the echad kohen hedish, like kiddush yodav ragav shachris, but whether a kohen gadol or a kohen hedish, if he didn't do kiddush yodav raglayim first thing in the morning, the avad, and then he did the avoda, avodah psula, then his avoda would be possible. So in other words, what we're saying is, if he didn't do the first kiddush yodav raglayim, then his avoda is possible. But if he missed out any of the other ones later in the day, then his avoda is kosher. So amoleid of achi. No, as long as he did the first one, if he missed the rest of them, then he's good with the other. So if he missed the other nine. So Amalei Rav Asi Rav Yechanan, Rav Asi Asi Rav Yechanan, Mechti, let's consider. How do we know that that the Kohen Gadol has to tovel and do all these Kiddush Adayim Raglayim on Yom Kippur, Chomesh Tevilas Vastara Kiddushin, this that he has to tovel five times and he has to be Mekadosh Yadayim Raglayim 10 times, Da'oraisa, all that is Da'oraisa, and by all of them, the pasuk says chukah, because at the end of the parasha in Achrim, right over there, after it describes the whole seder of the avodah of Yom Kippur, it says there should be v'hoisa l'chem l'chukas olam, and we have a general rule that when it says chukah means that it's ma'akev, means it has to be that way. So therefore, l'akfu, why are we saying that the rest of the tefillos and the rest of the kedushin are not ma'akev? They should be. Omelei, so Rabbi Yechanan answers him because earlier in that section, the Torah says that the Torah describes that he should put on the four big dekohona, the four special begadim of Yom Kippur, and the pasuk says he should wear them because then it's about kodesh yubash or mishnah sevad yuav b'sarei, etc. And then it finishes off ulavesham. It says he should wash his hands and feet ulavesham, and he should wear them. So by repeating the word ulavesham, he should wear them, means lavisha ma'akev. As it comes to teach us, only the wearing of the clothes is ma'akev, because we have the general rule when the Torah repeats something twice in connection with kosher, it means to be ma'akev. Vein davaracha ma'akev, nothing else is ma'akev, because it didn't say twice about the washing his hands and feet.
So it says
only by lavush. Only by lavush, does it say twice in the same pasuk over there. So it's by kodesh yulvash, and then later on it says ulavesham. So that's the reason. So if he doesn't wear the four special clothes of Yom Kippur, then it's ma'akev, then the avodah is possible for those parts of the avodah. On the other hand, if he didn't do the rest of the rechitzis d'ayin raglayim, then it's kosher b'diyavad. Sa'avu kohen hedyot. The kohen hedyot only does kiddush one time during the day anyway. Later on, when we get further into the sugya and we get more into the dinim of kiddush d'ayin raglayim, a regular kohen, in principle, he only has to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim once, and then he can do the avodah for the rest of the day. We'll see later on if he leaves the Beis HaMikdash, if he goes to the bathroom, and there's a couple of things where then he has to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim again. But here we're talking about the in general, yeah, the first one of the day, whereas the Kohen Gadol again is supposed to do them 10 times during the day. So that was the answer of Yochanan gave. Sahavu Pono, sort of Asi's face lit up with satisfaction, with pleasure that he now knew the answer. Omalei, however, Rabbi Yechanan tells him, don't think that was really such a good answer. Vav a'ufsakas yilach. It's like I've written you a vav on a piece of wood, which means, Rashi says two explanations, either a piece of wood has cracks and things in it, so if you write a letter like a vav on it, it doesn't come out very clearly, or the other explanation is the cracks and lines and whatever on a piece of wood themselves look like a vav. In other words, they look like a bunch of vav. In other words, nothing's actually been written over there, and you're looking at it as a vav. In other words, it wasn't really a very good answer, because yichachid is safra nami. Because by that logic, you should say the same thing applies to the first kiddush in the morning. Why is the braisa telling us that the first kiddush is ma'akev, and if he didn't do it, then the avodah is possible? According to what we just said, as a matter of that it says lovesham twice, and then verochat twice, then it should be any chitza that doesn't pass to the avodah.
Why just the first one?
Right. The answer is Amach Chizkiyah. The answer is Chizkiyah says, I'll tell you why the first one is ma'akev. Because Amakra, because when the Torah describes, back in Parashat Kisisa, when it describes the Kiyah and it says that the Kohenim should wash from it, the Pasuk says, V'hoyt alahem kok olam loyal zare l'doreisam. The Pasuk says it should be an eternal law for him, meaning Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, and for his children for all their generations. Meaning, therefore, we learn like this, by making the pasuk is making, no, it's making a hekesh, though, between Loi and Lozaroi, his children. Him, meaning the Kohen Gadol, Aaron, and his children. It's making a hekesh between them. Dovra ma'akev.
But you know that if it's for Lozaroi, it means for all the generations.
No, but Loi means the Kohen Gadol. Lozaroi means the regular Kohen.
Ah.
Yeah. So therefore, Dovra ma'akev v'zaroi, so the kind of thing that's ma'akev by other koyanim, ma'akev vay, is also ma'akev by the koyan gadol. And the other koyanim have to wash their hands before they do the avodah, because we just said before, we learn from the gzeira shavah, from the word chukah, from the chutz of gadim, that if they don't do the kiddush yadayim raglayim before they do the avodah, it's possible. So therefore, that means that the hekesh teaches us that's also ma'akev by the koyan gadol. Dovra she'en ma'akev rabbana, where it's something that's not ma'akev by his children, because his children, the regular koyanim, don't have to do the kiddush more than once. In principle, they only have to do it once during the day. Therefore, the extra ones are something specific to the Kohen Gadol. And ma'akev bo, therefore we learn from that, they're not ma'akev by him. So it still works. So Rabbi Yochanan's answer still works, that the Levisha, the four begadim, even though it's something that applies only to him and not the other Kohenim, is ma'akev, because it says twice the Levisham. The Rechitza, that the other ones aren't ma'akev, is because then we would offer through twice. And the fact that the first one is ma'akev is because we're saying that anything that's ma'akev by his children is ma'akev by him.
Meaning from the
friend
to the
client. Right. Okay, so actually...
He's only prohibited
for this. So he's only if he missed the first one, right? Okay, but actually what we really have is... Okay, so right. Rabbi Yonasan Omer Mechach. Rabbi Yonasan says, never mind that. I have a different way of learning this concept. The pasuk says, V'rochatu memenu Moshe v'Aaron Rabbanav. You have a different pasuk that says, when they set up the Mishkan and they put the kiyah in place, it says, Moshe and Aaron and his sons washed from it. Again, implying Dovra Ma'akev, the Bonner of Ma'akev Bari, same thing, only something that's Ma'akev by Aaron's children, the Kohen of Het Yotim, meaning the first Kiddush of the day, is Ma'akev by the Kohen Gadol. Dovra Shein, Ma'akev, the Bonner, again, something that's not Ma'akev by his children, the rest of the Tevilah, or the rest of the Kiddushim, because they don't have to do them, and Ma'akev Bari is not Ma'akev by the Kohen Gadol either. So we have two different ways of learning the same thing. So the question is, Rabbi Yonasan, my time, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan like Chizkiah's Pasuk from Loyal Lazar of the Jerusalem, and why does he have to bring a different Pasuk? The reason is Amalach Hahula Duris. Yes, but that's teaching us the concept that Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim is meant to be throughout all the generations, for his children as well. It's not meant to tell us anything about a Hekish. Whereas the pasuk that I'm quoting, V'Roch Tzimena Moshe V'Aaron Rabbanav, is telling us a one-time thing, how Moshe and Aaron and his children wash themselves from the Kiyur. So therefore, we can use it for a Hekish to say that it's teaching us a din that applies to the regular Kohenim versus the Kohenim Duris.
Because
the one-time thing, and therefore, as opposed to the other one, is teaching us b'chal, the concept that Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim applies across all the generations. Okay, the Idok, what about Chizkiah, my time of the Omer Me'ai, why didn't he use that pasuk? The answer is, he can't use the pasuk for Rachtim, Memenu Moshe, V'Aaron, Rabbanav, that Rabbi Yonasan used, because Chizkiah needs it for a different drasha, which Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina said. The Omer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, any kiyo that does not have enough water in it for four koyanim to mekadesh their hands and feet from it, ain mekadeshim bo, you cannot be mekadesh from the kiyo, you have to fill it up with more water. Shenema, because the pasuk says, v'roch to memenu Moshe v'Aaron abonav. The pasuk says, Moshe and Aaron and his sons should wash from it. Moshe is one, Aaron is two, his sons are another two, so that means four people. So there we see that it has to be four people. Because Moshe also served as a Kohen during the Shiva Thimami Lohim. Now, the question that many Achronim have is, Aaron at the time had four sons. He had Nadav and Avihu also. Nadav and Avihu died only on the eighth day of the Lohim. So why are we married? So there's many different answers. One of them is that the pasuk is talking about what happened on the eighth day, that from then on, yeah, it's only from then on. I mean, the problem with that is that Moshe didn't serve in the Mishkan from then on. He said the last day he served in the Mishkan is the eighth day. So Rashi actually says it, but here it means they didn't all serve at one time. But since the pasuk phrases it that way, then it means that you need a minimum of order for four people.
When did it happen?
On the eighth day of the Mishkan.
So Moshe served
on that day, but so did Nadav and Abihu. And then after Nadav and Abihu died, Moshe didn't continue serving.
Because
that's it. It's Kohen, it's fire. He was only temporarily a Kohen. Other than that, after that, went to Aaron and the children. The Rambam actually quotes it differently. The Rambam quotes, and maybe he had a different view, say, in the Gemara or the Medrash that has this, like this, that the four people are not Moshe. It's Elazar, Aaron, Elazar, Isamar, and Pinchas. So Pinchas was a Kohen. And we'll learn later on in the Gemara when he became a Kohen, but he did become a Kohen, apparently, while according to this, while Aaron was still alive.
Pinchas was who?
Pinchas was the son of Elazar.
The son of Elazar,
yeah. So, okay, so that's... You have a variety of other explanations as well, including the Chachamim talk about a number of reasons why Nadav and Abihu died, why they brought Esh Zara and they died. One explanation is they didn't wash their hands and feet. So in that case, fine, they didn't wash their hands and feet, and the other one did. So therefore, no, not that, there are many different explanations, yeah, but one of them is they didn't wash their hands and feet, so therefore, okay, if they didn't wash, then only Moshe and Aaron and Allah's only summer did.
And a Kohen doesn't wash his hands.
We said a Kohen mitzvah. We said. Okay, turn it up on. Kate said mitzvah of Kiddush. How is the mitzvah of Kiddush accomplished? What the Kohen does is he puts his right hand on top of his right foot. The yodeh smallest are gabe ragle smallest. He puts his left hand on top of his left foot. Or makandish, and then he's makandish. So this way, he bends over a bit. He bends over, but he's still basically standing, as the Gemara is going to say. So he has his hand, he has one
just above his feet.
I mean, not even necessarily just above. From the bar to Nura and the Nambam and whatever, it seems he's actually touching them. That's the Tanakhama. And the reason is because the Pasuk says that he has to wash his hands and feet, implying together. Rabbi Yosi says what he needs to do is maniach shtei yodav zu agavzu. He puts one hand on top of the other. Va'agave shtei raglo. Then he puts the two hands on top of the 2 feet. Zu agavzu, one foot on top of the other. In other words, he does like this.
Yeah.
Makandish, and then he's makandish. Yes, then. And then he's makandish. Omruvoi, so the Chacham said to him, you've exaggerated. You have shalasas king. You can't do like that. You're not going to be able to stand. So the question is, Shapur Kamerle, the Chachamim have a good point. What is Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda saying? The answer is, Amr Rabbi Yosef, v'chaveri Messiah. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say that, yes, you have another Kohen helping him and holding him up so he doesn't fall down. So the question is, in that case, my denial, then what's the practical, what's the underlying argument between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yosef? The answer is, Amar Abaya, Amidim and Asad Ikebenayo. The argument between them is, if you can only stand being supported by something else, is that considered standing? The Tanakhama would say no, and Rabbi Yosef Ben Hoda would say yes. Which, by the way, since the halacha is a Chachamim, Tosfos points out, we have a number, this comes up in a number of other areas in halacha as well. It means, for example, when you're leaning, you shouldn't be leaning on anything, because same thing, you're supposed to be standing when you're laying, or when you're getting an aliyah, whatever, so therefore you shouldn't be leaning on anything.
You put your hand.
No. Leaning means putting some weight on it such that if the thing was removed, you'd fall down. That's what we're saying over here. Omelet of Samagrade of Ashi Lavina. Why go to such trouble? Lace of Mesa Velakadish. Why not just crouch down, sit down, or not really sit, because you're not supposed to sit in the Azara, but at least like be semi-crouching and do the Kiddush that way. The answer is can't work because Omakrob the Shores, because the Pasuk says that you wash your hands and feet in order to serve. In order to serve in Mishkan or the Bes Mikdash, the Shirus Ma'umadu and the definition of serving in the Bes Mikdash has to be done standing, as we're going to say later on, as we mentioned briefly at the end of the previous parak, and we'll discuss later on in our parak. So therefore, since Kiddush Adayim Raglayim itself constitutes part of the Avodah, then you have to be standing. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, you have to actually be standing in a way that you can manage to stand unsupported, so like this. According to Rabbi Yosef Ben Hoda, it doesn't matter, you can even be standing supported, and that's still considered standing. But everybody agrees you have to be standing somehow. Okay. We'll leave off over here.